I thought you sold him drugs. Nope. That was
that was Draco, who is now dead.
Yeah, never mind. Live from the Mundangerous Matrix Construct program in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host, Ishan.
And welcome to episode 210 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about playing in fake worlds with real consequences. But first, the rogue traders meet an old friend in an unexpected place in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign. And later, the Minesweeper finds every trap, in the Character Creation Forge.
Total Party Thrill is brought to you this week by our friends at Kobold Press.
Warlock is a Patreon-supported project from Kobold Press, publisher of the Midgard campaign setting for 5th edition D&D.
To get Warlock patron, yeah?
I have a Warlock patron. What does that have to do with this?
So does Kobold Press, actually.
I mean, oh yes, yeah. It is us.
That's the way that that's the way that Kobold Press makes new 5th edition Midgard material on a regular, ongoing basis. In return for becoming their patron, you will gain access to new maps, new monsters, new 5e character options, adventures and awesome dungeons, and so much more.
So you can help the world of 5th edition. So you can help expand the world of 5th edition dark fantasy at www.patreon.com/koboldpress. Speaking of a terrible world of dark fantasy, Shane, where are we in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign?
So the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign is our Warhammer 40k Rogue Trader game, played using Dark Heresy 2nd Edition rules by Fantasy Flight Games. And on the Death World Iblis Prime, in the frontier city of Meridian, the Rogue Traders have set out to establish a colony in the name of the Holy Throne of Terra, and Prophet. So the Rogue Traders have entered the Technogangers League with a team comprised of the Honor Guard Captain Horst, the Seneschal Trix, and the Astropath Flare. They showed up unarmed with their ante, they entered the competition, they took a pill, and they were suddenly teleported high above an island where they were instructed to search, find gear, kill their competitors, and don't use witchcraft. And then they fell to the ground.
Is each of them guaranteed at least $50,000 for playing?
No.
No, not at all.
They are guaranteed nothing.
I mean, except that if they use witchcraft, bad things will happen.
Uh-huh.
How do they know that?
Because they were told by the voice of the Seer Unknown.
Yeah, and then Flare used a bunch of witchcraft. Mm-hmm. And hey, bad things happened.
Yeah, we'll get there. So, yep, they made their initial landing. They kind of, made their way from the crumbling ruins to the Lowland Lake. They had this massive storm kind of around the edges that was narrowing the safe areas, kind of pushing them towards the Caldera of Pain. Along the way, they looted some gear, they killed a few technogangers, they dodged pestilent clouds, random hails of bullets, warp miasma, just the usual stuff that you find on a deadly island battleground.
So Flare is continuing to reach out to the warp. It feels like there's like a veil or some sort of cloud. He can't quite get to it. The connection isn't clear, which is why he keeps trying it. And each time he suffers a little bit of corruption, which is really adding up quickly. Mm-hmm.
Along the way, they also crossed a team of ringers. One of them was the obnoxious man named Reaper, who kept shouting at his audience into a servo skull as his team rampaged across the island, killing everything in their path. They wisely decided not to engage them.
So by the time the rogue traders finally reach the Caldera of Pain, there are only 9 players left. Unfortunately, they are the second group to arrive, and they have to displace... And they have to dispatch the third place team using their looted Witch Burner, Shriekin' Shuriken Catapult, and their legendary Autocannon for the People.
So they are within this sort of lava cavern inside the caldera. They are just sorting through the bodies that they've just created, and they hear a familiar voice. It's your boy! Suddenly, they are face to face with the armored trio led by Reaper, And now that they're so close, they immediately recognize Reaper. Not someone they were expecting. Ishin, who is it?
It is Felipe, Flair's former attendant who betrayed them, and ever since has been their representative for their business partner, the rogue trader, Duhan Roth.
Yeah, so Felipe was the, of course, the attendant that broke Flair's heart. Flair still calls all of his attendants Felipe, and, you know, it was one great irony that you suffered when you met him here on this planet, now working for your sort of rival slash partner. And yet, here's Felipe now in the Caldera of Pain, standing between you and the goal that you had to win the league.
Yes, it was Felipe all along. But confronted by his former bosses, Felipe panics, and he throws a grenade to the ground, which explodes into a massive self-constructing fortress that divides the chamber in half.
Yeah, he wants to talk. Could have shot first. He decides he'd rather talk.
Darren's instant fortress? That's what he did?
Uh-huh.
Okay. He turns off his servo skull and explains that he was ingratiating himself with the locals and spending his free time gambling for the antis just to compete in this league. Turns out he's one of the best and he has a large following, so he can't simply throw this game to the rogue traders, you know, even if they are technically his bosses right now.
So at this point, Flair is like completely fed up with his petulant understudy. And he kind of forgets that cardinal rule one more time, and uses his psychic powers to open a gate of infinity, basically a dimension door, and charges right through it. On the other side, inside the fortress, he blasts one of Felipe's goons immediately, but Felipe is able to react fast enough to smash him with his massive legendary hammer, the Graviton Bong.
Does it reverse gravity? So that instead of being smashed to the ground, he feels high? Is that how that works?
Well, graviton weapons create a singularity that like draws armor in on the target, which creates a bunch of damage.
Misnomer.
What, because it's called a bong? That's the sound it makes as it rings off Flair's armor. Bong. Flair's dead.
He's very dead. So is Assault.
Yeah.
Horst and Trix then rush to the gate into the fray, and when the dust settles, they are victorious. The Seer Unknown congratulates them, and they are transported back to the dingy subterranean antechamber where they started this entire mess. Inside it, they find the corpses of the Lone Rando, Felipe, and Felipe's goons.
So, Horst and Trix look around, and there is one more body. It's Flair, visibly aged by his warp corruption, miraculously alive, and just barely clinging to life.
And we'll find out what happens next week.
I mean, you know what happens next. Flair spends a fate point, right? But we'll find out what happens after that.
What is he? Is he old now?
He's not. He's not like, he didn't turn 80, but he's definitely worse for wear, yeah.
Is he 60? Because Trunks going to hold that over him.
How old was Flair before?
Mid-40s.
Yeah, he's probably in his, like, 50s then. Yeah.
Yeah. Trank looks way better than him.
I mean, he's not actually aged. He just looks bad.
He just looks bad. Yeah, I know. That's even worse.
That third eye on his forehead wasn't doing him any favors anyway.
Gross. Gross. We're from the same planet.
Yeah.
Our families know each other. Gross.
I don't think your families do.
No, they do. That was our backstory. All right, so this week on the actual show, we're talking about playing in virtual realities. So by this, we mean pretty much any time your story is taking place within an environment that might not be real. And I think the key point here is that it doesn't really matter if the PCs are aware that it isn't real or not. So, you know, like Neo spends mostly his entire life inside the Matrix and he had no idea that it was actually virtual reality. Mm-hmm. But there were rules that he was adhering to, even if he didn't necessarily know that he was.
Right. Or, you know, like if the rogue traders ended up in a strange virtual reality projection by the Seer Unknown.
Yeah, like it's important for this episode to remember that we're not simply talking about like technology or sci-fi like the Matrix. Like you can have these kinds of scenarios in fantasy games as well. You can have an entire illusory city. you know, desert mirages often turn out to like have some sort of substance to them. You can actually get there, interact with them. There are spells that like will turn entire areas into like different kinds of terrain. In Wild West games, you'll have, you know, ghost towns that actually have real ghosts who are, you know, acting out the last thing they did in life. Or you walk into the saloon and you have interactions with people and you, you know, drink things and turns out none of it was real.
Yeah, the X-Men use the Danger Room and the Danger Cave, and I really feel like they got to rename those things, or at least one of them.
I think you're not wrong.
But they use that to train, to project holograms, right, to be able to practice.
Right, just like Star Trek, which has its holodecks, you know, on which something always goes wrong every episode.
In Shadowrun, the Matrix is both virtual and augmented reality, so you can sort of live in the Matrix or retreat into the Matrix, but you can also kind of use the Matrix as an overlay for reality, sort of Matrix hack things in the real world.
Yeah, where's the Decker? In the van. I'm not in a van!
Hey, in 5th edition, the Decker can actually be in the front now.
Ooh.
Yeah, and 6th edition, they'll probably screw it up again.
Is it a mobile van? Is that...
yeah.
And of course, a game like Eclipse Phase has simulspaces where, like, honestly, most of the action takes place. Like everything in Eclipse Phase, like, they're easy to initiate, they're really expendable. All right, so why might a GM or a player want to use virtual reality in a game? Shane, you already mentioned it. Like, the most obvious use is for training. You know, within the fiction of the game, you can program safety protocols so the PCs get incapacitated when they're knocked out rather than just straight up killed. This works really well when you're using, like, live ammunition, explosives, you know, dangerous radiation, right? And it also, it's very convenient for a malfunction in the safety protocols to segue directly into a more dangerous situation.
Yeah, you know, those safety protocols, they're always on the fritz. Let's run the simulation anyway, see what happens.
Yeah, well, we let the Decker write them in the first place, so... We all know that you rolled very poorly, but we're going to pretend that we don't, and we're going to go inside anyway. Why not? It also lets the party try out different situations that they couldn't otherwise. So, you know, if, for example, your game is taking place on Earth, you can have a session or an entire arc that takes place in outer space or in some kind of like hostile, poisonous environment or deep beneath the ocean.
It's also a way to let the PCs train their new abilities, right? Like if your game fiction requires like access to and downtime to actually learn how to do new things, then you can use VR as a way of actually developing those skills.
Yeah, I also like the idea that, you know, let's say you're playing a game and you know that like it's going to end in 6 months, or like the plan is that it's going to be relatively short and you kind of want to like try out higher level stuff or, you know, try out, you know, crazy gear. It's a chance to do like one session where you, you know, sort of like play a higher level version of yourself or, you know, like recreate a bunch of like crazy gear or fancy cars that don't actually cost you money in the game. You don't have to come up with like a contrived reason that like some donor gave you like a nice set of wheels and it's fine if you like destroy it. Like it's all just virtual.
I mean, that would actually kind of be a cool game where you had two character sheets, like your real current character and your future like simulation character. And you kind of like alternated play between the two sheets of like level, like you're trying to get your main character up to that like sort of max tier.
It'd be like Ready Player One, but cool.
Yeah, exactly. But it'd be a way to actually play end game content without having to, you know, start and exclusively play end game.
Yeah, no, actually I like that you could play like, you know, levels 3 through 8 of D&D and then like 17 through 20.
Yeah,
you don't
exactly
have to worry about like the other stuff
at the same time. You just trade off between them. Yeah.
Virtual realities are also really good for testing. You know, you can watch an NPC's reaction or, you know, a party member's reaction without the dire consequences that might come otherwise. Think about like, you know, if you're a test pilot, it might be like the test plane doesn't work or like you're not a good enough pilot and it's definitely going to like explode into balls of fire on reentry. Well, it's kind of nice to find that out before you actually like try to fly it.
Yeah. You know, generally you would prefer that, but I guess there's no testing like the real deal.
Even in like games where the stakes are much lower, like a, you know, a teen heartthrob game. You can even have things like a driving school, right? Like, you know, a sci-fi high school, you could take your driving test in virtual reality rather than instead of like an actual car.
Right. You can also use it for interrogation.
Yeah, I think we did this a lot in our Eclipse Phase game where, like, you know, we would capture a prisoner and then we weren't dumb. We didn't like interrogate them and run the risk of them like escaping or like fighting their way out. We like loaded all of ourselves into a virtual reality simul space and interrogated them there so that even if they did escape, they couldn't escape.
Mm-hmm.
Like, duh. Also, it's a good way to test them because you're like, all right, I threatened to kill you. And like, do you crack? No? All right. It turns out they didn't actually crack. But if like if we had gone through with it, they're not actually dead.
Right. Of course, you know, like anything, right? You can still play around with that. So there's no reason that the prisoner that you have captured in the real world and loaded into the simul space couldn't somehow trap you in the simul space to escape in the real world, right? Turnabout is fair play.
It's the best way to go.
You know the guy who coded that simul space. It's not that good.
No,
he's
it's
not
the
that
Decker.
Good. Yeah. I've heard that there's something in Star Trek called a Kobayashi Maru, which is, I don't know, some sort of test that makes Spock really angry. Because Shatner has to be really good at it.
Sure, yeah. Let's go with that.
And Han Solo
no,
let's
not
like
go with
it.
It's a no-win
right?
scenario. So, like, you die in the end. And, like, the point of the test is to figure out how you deal with, like, dying and losing, not how you deal with, like, the scenario that's presented, because, like, the program just always screws you over in another way.
Wait, didn't Kirk break it?
Yeah, he snuck in the day before and reprogrammed it so he could win.
Oh, he cheated. That's what pissed off Spock.
Well, don't tell Spock that it pissed him off.
Okay.
He wouldn't like the accusation of emotion.
Well, he's only half Klingon, so. Is he Klingon?
Sure. Let's go with that. He's half Biff.
Is that true?
He's half Twi'lek, like Ahsoka.
Ahsoka. Oh, man. You say one bad thing about Ahsoka, the whole internet tells you.
Oh, my. Look, we got the most engagement that we've ever gotten.
That's
so
true.
Let's do it again.
People who don't even listen to the show are upset that we got Ahsoka wrong.
Both. All right. It's good for science experiments too. You know, you always say like, hey, we ran the scenario. The computer ran the scenario and like we're pretty sure this is working or not. It's a nice way to work with radiation or to test out new code, all of which of course can go horribly, horribly wrong.
There's also an opportunity to push the party to the edge of their capabilities, sort of, you know, putting them in an untenable situation, like a Kobayashi Maru, right? Like an unwinnable situation or impossible odds. But you don't have to worry about ruining your campaign or TPKing or ending a storyline prematurely, right? Like it's just a VR.
Yeah, in a superhero game, you don't have to worry about like all that collateral damage and all the people who are dead now because you destroyed the city. There are some possible problems here with like just resetting people's failures or just being like, nope, none of that actually happened and like there were no consequences. But you know, we'll get into that a little bit later in the episode.
Yeah, I like this. You can also use it to test the personalities of the characters, right? Like that becomes a challenge. So like, when put under pressure, like how do they act? And even if it is virtual, right? Like the outcome isn't real. The emotional and sort of relationship aspects of that stress are still real for the characters, right?
Yeah, so, especially if they didn't know at the time that right. like it would turn out not to be real. I also like that mechanically, like a lot of RPGs are pretty swingy. Like you can set up what you consider to be a balanced encounter, but like you don't really know which way the dice are going to go, so you can actually put something together that like may not be like completely impossible but will require a ton of luck and like a lot of good strategy, and like it's possible that the party actually succeeds, and then even if it turns out that like there were safeties in place, like that success is still worthwhile and still valuable, and like they still did it, you know. Mm-hmm. But you did sort of have a break in your back pocket just in case it all went awry. And like, it was fine if it went awry because it was kind of supposed to in the first place.
Right.
VR also lets you do sort of like what if scenarios. Like a lot of science fiction settings will have like mind hacking or memory editing, things like that. That lets you put players into like either a different body or like a slightly different mindset, right? They can either like play completely different characters who are not themselves, or they could be their same characters but with like different or edited temporary personalities.
Oh, so like an MMO.
Do they have personalities in MMOs?
I mean, as much as you chat, they do.
Okay, so none.
But keep in mind that everybody on the internet is a lie, so...
There are no consequences, it's true.
Right.
We're all just resetting this. This is great for mini games. I think especially if you run into like GM fatigue or player fatigue or just like game fatigue, like you want to change a pace. A VR mini game where like everything's different or everyone is completely different characters is a nice change of pace for like just a couple weeks.
VR is also a great way to show rather than tell. So instead of narrating the history or, you know, like explaining some events or just kind of like hitting the bullet points, you can actually have the party experience it, right? Like first person, like through a memory dump or, you know, some type of magic or whatever it is, like you can give them like a first person point of view into what's going on.
Yeah, I actually like to do this. I think I probably do it at least once in almost every campaign that I run. Like in Morning Glory, the party inhabited the
Arenal elves, right?
Say it again?
The Arenal elves, right?
Yeah, exactly. The elves, like during the strike to destroy the House of Vol, like 3,000 years ago. And, you know, like I could have put together a document. Like there were times when I like made an age document and, you know, had you guys read it. And like the one person who was interested in that particular bit of history would read it and maybe explain it to other people when it was relevant. But for this, like we just did an entire session where like you guys were the strike team sent in to like kill the House of Vol. And so I think that sunk in more, like more of you remembered the history of it because we just sort of made it that like, however you guys did it, that's how it had actually happened. Because, you know, you were reliving these memories, but of course you were playing them out as players.
Right.
And you could, this does not need to be an entire session, but it can be things like, you know, it turns out you were the murder victim and you like see who like killed you because you're sort of inhabiting their memories or like, you know, some residual psychic version of it that, you know, you were sort of reliving. Could be that you're the killer. You could be like the first police officers on the scene of a cold case. And like your investigation checks are the ones that are like revealing new information that you now have to solve the case in the present day.
I also like the chance to be like the heroes who made the heroic last stand, right? The chance to play as them, but then since it's virtual reality, right? Like it's not permanent and it's not your characters. But you still kind of get that emotional payoff.
Yeah. You can do an entire session where like everyone is sort of deciding like when is going to be my moment to like die for everybody else. Like that can be kind of cool. It's sort of like one session of Phoenix Dawn Command.
Right. Of course, virtual reality is very useful for communication. So it's a sort of a new modern era kind of high tech means of teleconferencing, a way to conduct clandestine meetings or peace negotiations or, you know, anything over distance, right? Like you can meet in virtual reality. It's basically the concept of FaceTime.
Yeah, if you have access to VR, then I would think that pretty much all diplomacy would be done via that. Because, like, why would you expose your diplomats to, like, possible assassination in another country?
I mean, we do, and we do. So, that's...
I mean, we have FaceTime. Tradition. Yeah. Like, I mean, if you have, like, you know, perfect virtual reality, then, like, I wouldn't fly people to Switzerland.
Sorry, have you not played Second Life? That's perfect virtual reality. Perfect. It even has brands.
I play The Sims. Is that the same thing? It feels
basically the same. Yeah. Except they speak an easier language.
I also like using VR for in-game asides. It's like a nice sort of meta game that can happen at the table. So like if you have like a shared augmented reality or like a chat room. Like if it's a relatively high tech setting that you're playing in, you can have different party members in different places, or you know, you're even like on a strike team that's like infiltrating a particular facility. All of you can be separate but still communicating via like chat or emoji. Like, this is what our Eclipse Phase game does every time, like, we like upload the tactical net. Like, we are all now in like connected, and people are narrating what they are doing, like, oh, I am like shooting this guy, but at the same time I'm sending a text message over here, you know, sometimes with instructions and sometimes just like funny commentary on what we're doing.
So you can also introduce time dilation to these kind of environments where it gives you like more time to do your planning, right? Or to have your commentary. So like the idea of, cool, we are fighting in real time, but in the simul space, we are, you know, running at, I don't know, like 1,000th time, right? So we can have this conversation and hash it out a dozen times over before, like, I need to make a decision on whether or not to shoot my gun or swing my sword.
Yeah, that's a thing we do in Eclipse Phase, and like that's part of the game, is like you, part of your brain can be running in the simul space at time dilation. So there's never a scenario in Eclipse Phase where we say, all right, now we're going to have half the session be planning. We're just like, okay, we go, and we will plan as we go, because like in the time it takes us to take three steps down the hallway, we have all like hashed out what the next steps are going to be once we get to the door.
Right. And then a good way to introduce virtual reality without having it necessarily like take over your game is to just let it be a form of recreation, right? So that when you need virtual reality space as a plot element, it's already been introduced, right? So it's not coming out of nowhere, but it makes it available and easy for any of the other options.
All right, so when you're using it, you're going to want to describe to people what it's like. And the first thing you'll need to know is, like, who is the creator of this particular virtual space? Who made it? What is their level of control? You know, like, can they change everything? Can they change or control anyone who, like, shows up in it? Or are they just, like, sort of creating the environment?
Yeah, if it's created specifically for the party, obviously it will be informed by the creator's attitude towards the party. It'll be nicer if they like the party, and probably worse if they don't.
What are the creator's goals? Like, are they looking to get something out of the party, or did they just create this and you know, the party happens to be here, right? Like, in the Matrix, sure, it was created by, like, the machines, but it wasn't necessarily individualized down to a single person unless they were like really focusing on them and knew where they were, right? So you're sort of looking at, what is the level of engagement of the creator, right? Are they actively changing things in response to what the party is doing, like in real time, which is possible, like, hey, we made a new wall here so you can't go in that direction? Or is it one of those things where, like, this illusory city was created by mages 10,000 years ago and they're all dead and it's just sort of like running a program?
Right. So you also want to, you know, think about what the terrain of the virtual reality is. You know, is it an empty, blank, you know, white room? Is it a cityscape? Is it like someplace in nature? Is it something that's mutable that can be changing? Is it something that's merged or can be merged? I think a lot of like Inception, right? Like, those dreamscapes are all sort of like constantly mutating, but there are all these like really vivid locations.
Yeah, and there are recognizable elements in them. Like, if you need to create one of these on the fly, it's pretty easy to like do a merged one, right? Okay, we'll start with the cityscape, but make the sky different. Like, it what you see is like a giant ringed planet up in the sky, which like wouldn't be possible because, you know, everything would be torn apart by gravity wells. But like here, that's totally fine. And then when you open a door, and inside is not the interior of a building, it's, you know, something else, a meadow, whatever. And then make it pretty clear what the quirks are. Like, the thing that is going to make sense to people is, like, what is it that makes this different from the real world, right? Like, if it is just a carbon copy of the real world, then you don't really need to explain that. Hey, it looks like you're in a city. But if there are different things or things operate differently, those are the ones you call out. So first off, aesthetics. What looks different, right? Like, if the sky doesn't affect you, but there is a giant ring planet in it, that's something people will notice. You call that out, and it signifies that you are not where you used to be, or you are not in like a normal place.
Yeah, probably the second thing that people will notice is the physics. So if taking a step is heavier or lighter than it normally is, that's going to feel pretty weird. Any type of physical change to the world is obviously going to be felt pretty quickly.
Yeah, movement capabilities are pretty common. Like, everyone can fly here. Why? Well, just because we want everybody to be able to move around, like, in this particular space. Like, right. Can't you fly in Second Life? Isn't that, like, a thing?
I've never played Second Life, dude.
Oh, I've only seen an occasional video. You just seem like a Second Life kind of guy.
Do I seem like I have that much time?
I have no idea, because I don't know anything about Second Life. So basically, that's a subset of, like, what are the rules of this particular virtual space? You know, everyone can fly, or physics is different here, but it could be other things like, you know, no magic is allowed. In Eclipse phase, no psychic powers work inside simul spaces, because, like, psychic powers have to do with, like, physical meat brains, and there are no physical meat brains inside a simul space. It's all, like, robot brains.
Yeah, and I mean, even down to, like, how tangible or intangible the contents of the virtual reality are, right? So can you pick up and interact with, is there, like, a physics engine involved, or is it simply, like a painting, right, that you're experiencing in 3D where you can't interact and change it?
Yeah, like, is this illusion something where it's sort of ghostly and you can stick your hands right through it and it's obvious that it's an illusion, you're trying to figure the way out? Or, like, is this ghost town, like, can you actually drink the whiskey in the saloon and it really tastes like whiskey?
Right.
And then in a lot of ways, you'll probably be able to ignore the mundane, or the party will be able to. In a lot of virtual realities, you don't need to worry about food or water. You may not have to worry about fatigue, like, you may not need to sleep. You might be able to run, you know, for as long as you want without having to worry about getting tired, because, you know, you're not actually running.
Yeah, and what you're presented in the world doesn't necessarily need to make sense, right? Like, it doesn't need to be grounded with, like, streets that are active and, you know, have people walking on them and cars and traffic. It doesn't need to have, like, it doesn't need to be based and scaled on an economy of any sort. It's fake.
Yeah, and it's a cool opportunity to play in a space that you wouldn't be able to normally, but, like, you could get to, but, like, the circumstances are different, right? Like, some of the most iconic scenes in The Matrix are just in a city, but there aren't any people around. And, like, that's cool that you have an entirely empty city, but it hasn't been trashed, right? There wasn't an apocalypse. It wasn't overrun by zombies and, like, all the buildings are falling down. It's just, there's nobody here and we're walking around and, because, like, it's a familiar space within unfamiliar circumstances.
Right. All right. So what are some challenges for virtual realities?
Well, if you're not using it just as a place to talk about your feelings, then probably there are going to be some kind of enemies there. First kind that you'll face will be some sort of monsters. So, you know, these are enemies or opponents who are not necessarily, like, focused around goals. They're not necessarily intelligent, right? So they could be native. It could be some sort of creature that is born of this space, right? It could be, like, a digital creature. If it is a made environment, it could have abilities that are endemic to that environment. So, like, if the virtual reality that you're in is, like, the inside of a volcano, and normally you couldn't, like, breathe inside a volcano, but you are here, it's very likely that you have some sort of, like, fire-based creature, or, you know, a red dragon, or an earth elemental, something like that. It's important to realize that when you are running these kinds of creatures, or when you are fighting or trying to, like, parlay with these creatures, that the environment is real to them. Like, as far as they're concerned, they are inside a volcano, because, like, that's where they live, you know? They are not real, but you'll need to deal with them like they're real. And that'll inform the way that they act, the way that they respond, the way that they attack.
So you can also have monsters or enemies that are jacked into the same virtual reality that you are, right? So they are likely going to be hampered or empowered by the same rules and physics and terms that the players are. So they might be faster, they might be tireless, etc.
Right, like, if you can fly, they can probably fly. That's something good to remember. And it provides an incentive for players to quickly learn the rules and, like, what exactly are the limits of what you can do. You know, like, can we run up walls? can we run up walls permanently, or like, do you just need to get enough momentum and you can run like a few stories up, but then you fall? Like, those are things that all tell you the abilities of the opponents that you're facing, and more than likely give you tools with which to defeat them.
And then I think, in contrast to native monsters, right, anything that is jacked into this virtual reality, its goals in the space will be informed by its goals and purpose outside the space. So it is trying to prevent you from doing something, or trying to learn something, or figure something out, or find something, perhaps before you do, or like in order to prevent you from doing so, right? Like, they have to have some goal that is not just simply whatever's inside.
Right. And similarly, but probably just more powerful, are rivals, like people who you are usually facing off against on a recurring basis outside of the virtual reality, and now they're in here with you. So, you know, you're going to want to know, what are the circumstances of the meeting? Like, why are they here as well? Why are they in this same virtual reality? Like, it could be that you both found the illusory city at the same time, and now you're all contending with the challenges of the environment at the same time. Maybe they've lured you here. Maybe you've lured them here. Like, maybe they're the creator of this space, and like, they have a lot more power, but fortunately there are more of you, you know? Like the enemies who are jacked in, you are going to want to look at the, like, the difference between what their goals are in the real world and what their goals are in here. Like, they may be essentially suicidal in their aggressiveness because they know that, like, they can't die permanently and it doesn't really matter here.
Right. So another concern and challenge related to virtual realities is how you get in them, or how you get out of them, or what happens if you get stuck in them, right? A lot of times, like, virtual realities are infinite in all directions. They may be non-Euclidean. They might not make sense to somebody who is used to existing in three dimensions and has their whole life, right? So you can have challenges related to navigation or related to escape.
Yeah, maybe like the challenge is you're stuck in here. Maybe it's a perfect paradise and it's wonderful, but like, there's no way out, and real actual things with real consequences are happening outside in the real world, and now you need to get out of here.
And or like, maybe the only way to get out is to answer a phone call from a telephone, and if you don't get to the nearest phone booth in time, you can't escape.
Yeah, people are trying to drive trucks right into those phone booths, and you got to get there first.
Why don't you just, yeah, never mind, whatever.
Look, if you believe in yourself, I think you can do it.
Get a cell phone, my dudes.
Who decides who gets in, who gets out, and who has access to this space? Like, that'll basically inform how difficult it is to get in or out. Getting booted is something to consider. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Like, getting kicked off unwillingly or unwittingly. It's possible for players to weaponize this. Like, if one of your rivals is fighting you in the space, if you can somehow like interrupt their connection or like boot them from the server, then is that a win for you? Like, are they essentially banished and like they're gone now and you can do whatever it is you need to do in here? Or does that just kick them back to the real world and now that's a problem?
Yeah, or the flip side, if getting, you know, suddenly rapidly booted from virtual reality is devastatingly dangerous, then you might trap somebody in virtual reality so that you can defeat them on different terms, right? So if your enemy is stronger than you in real life, then meet them in virtual reality, trap them in virtual reality, and even the playing field.
And then find them and unplug them.
Yeah, exactly.
Shane, not like this.
So think about what those effects that occur in the real world are, right? Are you weakened? Are you strengthened? Are you like physically harmed or mentally or emotionally, or, you know, like, is part of your soul sapped as a result?
Yes, a virtual reality that causes corruption. Where have I heard that before?
Never heard of one.
Weird. And consider what kind of new abilities there are inside this virtual reality. So, of course, the Matrix, right? You can do all kinds of things that a real human being can't actually do because you understand that this is a computer code that has rules that can be bent. In the same way, you know, maybe you have someone who's like helping you on the outside, who's giving you stuff. magic items. Maybe inside here you can use magic. I mean, inside the virtual reality might be the only place that magic actually exists, right? It's like hard sci out there.
Yeah.
Are there ability score or like characteristics adjustments? Like, are you much stronger in here than you had initially known? These are all things that you can actually keep behind the screen if you are a GM, you know, sort of adding them in addition. Like someone tries to like kick down a door and it turns out the door is flying off their hinges and like they didn't expect that. Or you can just sort of like, you know, tell people about the bonuses or go all the way up to like, here's a new sheet. Here's who you are in here.
Yeah. All right. So what are some of the pitfalls of using virtual realities in games?
We mentioned it before, but there can be a feeling that there is a lack of consequences, right? Like if death can be reset, does any of this really matter? If everything that we did for the last entire arc turns out to have just been a dream, why do we care at all about it?
Yeah, and it can undermine future plots down the road, right? Like if big dramatic moments are undone once, they can always be done again. And that can be challenging for like establishing real stakes going forward, even if you have no intention of introducing this concept again.
Yeah, the worst is like when you have players who are like, I don't think this is real and I think none of this matters. So like we should just sit on the ground and wait for it to pass.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think one thing you can do is make sure that some consequences carry over, even if it isn't all of them. So for example, you can have lingering effects like wounds that happen, or like maybe a death in the virtual reality causes some sort of lingering wound in real life.
If you die in the game, you die in real life, dude.
That's it. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
Yep. Sorry. It's all real.
You may gain additional mechanical abilities. You may gain techniques or spells or stunts, feats, you know, things that you might have learned in the virtual reality might actually carry over to your real character sheet.
Yeah, I like the idea that, you know, if people understand that it is a virtual reality, they may try things that they weren't willing to try in the real world because they know that like they won't necessarily die, right? So they'll like leap off high things and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea that translates somehow into some like real life ability that you then have, right? Like you're better at jumping, or like you learn a new like battle master technique because you took on like three monsters at the same time, which you never normally would have done because you're not an idiot. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, make sure that like winning in the game matters somehow. Like I say game, but like in the virtual space matters somehow back in the real world. I mean, it could just be that like, you know, you are searching for a thing in the virtual space. And so like, you know, if you get it, you have succeeded. Like that was the goal in the first place. But even if this is like a recreational space, even if this is something where, you know, all the consequences or the physical consequences anyway are getting reset, you are getting something that you carry out of that, whether that is information that moves the plot forward or the fact that you won within this particular space carries weight on the outside. So, you know, like in the Techno Gangers League, like, does it really like matter in the game itself if they win? I mean, like it could have been turned off and the game could have been over even if they didn't necessarily die, right? Like that could have happened.
Could have, but they need a reward, right? That's the goal is to get the reward of the game.
Right, exactly. Like winning the game is like in the virtual space is the reward that they were going for in the first place. And like that has consequences once they come back out of it. I mean, in the recap, we haven't necessarily seen yet what that reward is, but like things happened because of it. In the same way, maybe like they're getting information from like an interrogation, even if like they weren't necessarily going to be able to like accidentally, you know, kill the person they're interrogating, or like they get information from the failed experiment, even if it like went awry.
I mean, or they validate that the experiment was successful and then they need to recreate those conditions in the real world, which may be challenging. Right.
Right. So now they know the exact goal that they're trying to aim for.
Right.
Another potential pitfall is you're basically, holding a class on Murder Hobo 101. Like, hey, here's a bunch of people that you're interacting with, but none of these people matter, and none of the consequences matter, and you can treat them however you want because like they're not real people. Go for it.
Yeah, you get Westworld.
Yeah, great. Exactly. And people are like, huh, I'm kind of developing a taste for this.
Yeah, I don't really see the appeal of murder hoboing when there's no real permanent reward for it, but I guess I'm not a murder hobo by default either, so maybe I just don't see the appeal in general. And then I think the other pitfall here is you've got to fit the virtual reality into your narrative, and it can be pretty jarring having to switch between the two, right? Like, it can be, like, it can invite the question of, like, if I can sit in this paradise virtual reality, why would I go and engage with this awful reality outside? You know, like, the simple reason of, like, oh, well, because you're a hero in a story and, like, you have to keep moving forward, like, that can be a little frustrating to players who are playing that hero and are they themselves not necessarily so inclined.
Yeah, and I think that's basically sort of the main takeaway from using virtual realities is, like, there needs to be a reason to use a virtual reality or an illusion that couldn't be handled in the game or in the narrative of the story more easily. You know, like, it's easier just to act it out, just to have a fight, just to have people do real things in the real world. So use them when there is an opportunity to do something that you couldn't do otherwise that would actually make sense, or to give players the opportunity to do something original or fun in a way that wouldn't make sense otherwise inside the narrative.
Yeah, and then make it feel special. Like, if the virtual reality is commonplace, make it fantastical. And if virtual reality is rare, then make it hyper-realistic and make that experience stand out. All right, do you hear that, Ishan?
No, I turned sound off on the server.
Well, then you can't hear me rooting around in here for another character in the Character Creation Forge. But before we move on, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at EvilSensCarne. That's Malice minus Meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrill.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Total Party Thrill.
And join the conversation on Discord. There's a link in the show notes.
Total Party Thrill is brought to you this week by Nerdarchy. Out of the Box Encounters is Nerdarchy's first Kickstarter, and it's already funded and smashing through those stretch goals. Like a car that we stole, or I guess that we uploaded and then drove like we stole.
So, Out of the Box Encounters is a book of encounters designed to make running 5th edition effortless. Each encounter in the book is full of content that can be used to fill in the gaps between adventures, hook your characters into a new story, or have entire campaigns built around them.
It's packed with wilderness and dungeon encounters. The book has all areas of play covered, from sword and spell slinging to puzzles to social interaction. I don't see the point in social interaction.
Yeah, there's basically no point. I mean, all of that is just a dice roll, so why bother having an encounter for edition?
Right, and I roll high all the time.
I guess they're padding their book with social interaction, aren't they?
Ugh, pillars.
So, the Nerdarchy team is collaborating with amazing people to make this book a reality, including Matt Mercer from some show that you've probably never heard of, and DSPN's own Lisa Penrose and James Intricasso.
Who you have definitely heard of.
Mm-hmm, because you listen to Behold Her and Tabletop Babble, because you love our network.
So, check out all of the awesomeness at nerdarchy.com.
All right, this week in the Character Creation Forge, we are building the Minesweeper. Ishan, what is a Minesweeper?
All right, so are you trapped in a simulspace and you're never quite sure what's real and what's not?
No, I'm not.
Are you sure?
Oh,
how do you know?
I'm supposed to say yes and. Yes, yeah. Yes, I am.
You definitely are, you just don't know yet.
And I'm worried that everything could actually be a trap.
Yeah, Shane, you think that's air you're breathing?
Yes. And?
You want to bring along the Minesweeper, who can check for all kinds of danger multiple times per round.
All right, I like it. So what classes do I need? What levels should I take?
All right. Inquisitive Rogue 14, Great Old One Warlock 2, Divination Wizard 4.
All right, so from Rogue, we're going to have 7d6 sneak attack, insightful fighting, which gives you a chance to grant yourself advantage, cunning action, uncanny dodge, evasion, you know, all the usual rogue good stuff.
Four expertises, which you are going to spend on perception, investigation, insight, and thieves' tools, plus reliable talent, so you're not going to get less than a 10 on any of those. Starting at level 3, though, you can't roll below an 8 on insight. And then at level 3, you can make perception or investigation checks as a bonus action, which means you can do one of them as a bonus action, the other as an action, and still move around. You are, in fact, the minesweeper. I do a perception check to check for traps or anything that looks amiss. I do an investigation check to check for traps or anything else that looks amiss. And at level 9, if you do this at half speed, you have advantage on both of those checks.
Then at level 13, you'll be able to see through illusions, shape changers, deception magic, up to wisdom modifier number of times per day. And then at level 14, you can see things without even seeing them because you gain blind sense.
Hey, I think that goes through the ground, which is where a lot of traps are.
Right.
From Warlock, you'll get telepathy for silent communications, because I think sometimes when you're trying to disarm that trap, even a little bit of a sound is probably not a great idea. I'd probably use that as a trigger for the glyph of warding that I make.
Right.
People talk.
For invocations, you'll take Devil Sight and Eldritch Sight, which will, of course, allow you to see through darkness, even magical darkness.
And you'll always be able to see magical auras. Hey, sometimes glyphs of warding or other traps give off magical auras because they're magic.
Mm-hmm.
From Divination Wizard, you'll get Portent 2 times a day, which is extremely useful when you really, really, really need to make that disable trap check. You'll get spells like Shield and Absorb Elements, just in case you don't. And you'll get spells like See Invisibility, helpful for invisible monsters and invisible traps. The Ritual Unseen Servant, which can go do things like try to trigger traps for you. You don't get the spell Find Traps, but that is because that spell is garbage.
Uh-huh.
It tells you that there are traps, but it doesn't tell you where. And right. Unfortunately, it has a 120-foot range, which means it would be better if it had a 10-foot range.
Because
You could be like, oh, good, it's right around here somewhere. But 120 feet, that's like somewhere in this building, there's a trap.
Exactly. Oh, this dungeon, it has a trap? You don't say. Thanks, spell.
Imagine that.
All right, so for leveling order, I think we'll start with 4 levels of rogue, then take our 2 warlock levels, and then take all 4 levels of wizard, and then finish out our rogue. All right, so Ishan, who is your minesweeper?
My minesweeper is a very simple person. She took just a little too much mandrake root when she was young, and really doesn't interact with most people anymore these days. It opened her mind up just a little too much to the wide, wide world, sort of connected with a vestige from the other side of reality. And now she can see everything all the time, which is why she really doesn't talk very much. In fact, the person who makes most of the decisions is her familiar, because you also get the Find Familiar spell. Who perches on her shoulder and is really the character that you're playing, because the minesweeper is just walking around doing what the familiar says she should do.
So scene servant.
Sure, yeah. Which is, walk around and alert me to any danger. Occasionally she'll make a little pinging sound. Sometimes that's helpful, a little bit of echolocation.
Right.
Makes unseen servants when necessary, and carries around as many 10-foot poles as possible.
Perfect.
Yeah. What about your minesweeper?
My minesweeper is a thief, but not the kind of like cat burglar thief that you usually think of. Is more the kind of thief that works with a crew. And that comes with a particular set of skills, right? And one of the things you need to be able to do is properly case the joint before you send anybody in. So like from thief to sort of doing some, I guess we would call them black ops. I don't know what the equivalent would be in a fantasy setting. I guess Black Ops. But, you know, like, works on a team doing kind of elite breaking and entering.
Breaking. It's like Acquisitions, Inc.
Yeah, exactly.
Who are you? I'm the Breakinator.
Oh, I'm the Breakomancer. But yeah, so like responsible for, you know, casing the joint, making sure that everything is on the up and up, keeping track of where all the guards are and whatnot. And it turns out that dungeons aren't a whole lot different than heavily defended manor homes or castles or any other kind of, you know, home to the nobility that might need to be broken into and have somebody sorted out on the other side.
All homes of the nobility need to be broken into.
Mm-hmm. That's the rules of the Purge.
It's true. For one fortnight, there are no laws.
For one fork knife, there are no laws. All right, before we wrap up, we want to take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters.
Your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show every single week. So if you'd like to learn more, you can check out our rewards at patreon.com/totalpartythrill.
You can also leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Leaving us a 5-star review helps other people find the show, and we will read it on the air.
Just like this one, this is A Consistent Source of Inspiration by Gonzo Banjo. I started running a D&D 5e campaign for some friends at work about a year and a half ago. Most of the players were new to tabletop gaming, but I had played a bit of 3.5 in college, so I agreed to GM. I reached out to my gaming friends for advice on something worth listening to for inspiration, and Total Party Thrill came up. A few episodes in, and I was hooked. Now I've listened to every episode, many of them multiple times. They nail down their format early on and stick to it, dividing almost every episode into 4 tidy sections: industry news, campaign recap, main topic, character creation. The topics they choose are varied enough that I can always find at least a couple of episodes to listen to that will tie in with whatever I'm planning for the week.
The recap of their home campaigns is surprisingly engaging. No offense intended. I just know how people's eyes sometimes glaze over when I tell what I think is an epic story from my table. And the Morning Glory campaign was a direct inspiration for my deciding to use some GM magic and transport my campaign from a homebrew setting to Eberron when my second child was born and I needed to lighten my workload. Thanks to the Character Creation Forge, I have a binder full of characters I, now the forever GM, will probably never get to play. If you are at all interested in D&D or tabletop gaming in general, whether you're a player or a game master, I strongly encourage you to give TPT a shot. I've listened to many, many gaming podcasts at this point, and none have come close to this one.
That was really lovely.
It was really nice.
Also, that is exactly what happened in Morning Glory. We transported it to Eberron when we were like, we should figure out where we are.
Yeah, you can totally do that. All right, what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We'll be talking about our time at Gen Con last week, and we'll be running some new plot hooks for you.
And in the Character Creation Forge?
We're building the Trick Shot.
Well, that's it for episode 210 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.
Total Party Thrill is brought to you by D&D Beyond. D&D Beyond is the official digital toolset and game companion for Dungeons & Dragons.
You can use it to build characters, track campaigns, run adventures, and do a lot more. Shane, I keep learning all different kinds of things that you can do. For example, let's say you were going to build, a 20th level character, perhaps called the Minesweeper.
Mm-hmm.
It might be convenient for you to look up every spell in the game that finds stuff.
Oh, yeah?
So you could do Google searches, which are complicated, or you can look up spells by tag, like detection, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or let's say that you're building the Jumpman. The Jumpsman.
Thank you.
And you needed to know all the magic items that influence your jump height. Well, guess what? You could search jump in D&D Beyond, and it will bring up not only the jump spell, but also the 2 items that we identified 2 weeks ago. Last week. It was last week at this point. I don't know what episode we're recording right now, but I know that it's sponsored by D&D Beyond.
Is it October? I'm unsure.
Whatever month it is, it's sponsored by D&D Beyond.
All right. In addition to all that cool database stuff, D&D Beyond has lots of awesome content for free, like the D&D Basic Rules. There are articles from writers like James J. Heck and videos from people like Todd Kenrick.
And they're constantly updating it with new features, so there are improvements to the platform constantly coming through. It is getting better every single day.
So, if you'd like to learn more, you can check it out at dndbeyond.com.